Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us at restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm very well.
Lots of emails from a little opening segment we did just a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
People like it and they want more. The Zagat Restaurant Survey, which you can go to online, zagat.com, they have a bunch of different services that are great. One of them is called the Outtake of the Week, where they take a particularly snippy or funny or some sort of a snippet from one of their user comments, one of their reviews that they may or may not use in the final Zagat survey, but I like it a lot. So here are some more outtakes of the week from Zagat.com. My favorite is, my office comes here for special lunches. I wish they'd stop.
You get the feeling they're not so special, those lunches.
Why is it that the negative comments are so much funnier?
It's really nice here. I love the pretty chandelier. It's not going to make outtakes of the week.
Okay. There's another one. The food may have been excellent, but I was choking on the prices.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that before. here's another one. It's not that funny. It's kind of cool. My waiter was so soft-spoken, we thought he was a mime.
We have waiters sometimes, especially in the Italian restaurant, who talk with their hands a little too much. Do you think that's what they meant?
No, I don't think so.
Sign language there going on.
Here's a good one. This is one of my favorites. Who said it was okay to expose your chest hair while serving people their sandwiches and frozen yogurt?
I don't think anybody said that, Francis. I think that's, hair should, when serving food, hair should remain on top of your head. That should be where you see it.
I have another one that's related to the first.
Maybe on your knuckles, Italian you are.
I'll stop soon. I have another one related to the first. You ready? Here's an outtake of the week from April 30th. A good place to go with coworkers whom you don't like.
Now, here's my question. Is it a good place to go because with coworkers that you don't like because the food is really bad and you'd want to torture them with bad food?
Yeah, but you got to eat it too.
Or does the food come out really, really quickly and get you out of there faster? Because when I go out with people I don't like, what I want is, do you have an express lunch? Do you have anything that comes in styrofoam that I can take with me?
No. What I think it was is it's probably a loud place. You can't hear them. And here is my favorite, and this is the final one we'll talk about. The final outtake of the week, describing the service, and they say, staff wanders around as if they have just been beamed to a strange location. People are really mean, okay? People are working hard in these restaurants.
People are putting their life into their restaurants. Stop being so mean to us, all right?
Talking about somebody who's working hard, who's been on our show before, Craig Laban is the...
Who's a little bit mean.
Who's a little bit mean. He was voted meanest man in Philadelphia.
Yes, he was.
And he was proud of that. But Craig Laban is an excellent restaurant critic who has the job of reviewing Philadelphia and the surrounding areas. He even goes into the suburbs of South Jersey down there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Philadelphia is an emerging restaurant city. There's a lot of cool stuff going on there, but it's no New York,
mm-hmm.
okay? But it's a much smaller city, and there are really a lot of cool and interesting things going on in Philly.
Well, and I have to tell you, in the story we're about to tell you about, I was just down the Jersey Shore in Ocean City, where a lot of people from Philadelphia go, and a lot of the Philly newspapers are published, and this is the talk of the town. I mean, this is front page news.
Well, Craig Laban is the most serious restaurant critic down there. And he calls a spade a spade. I mean,
mm-hmm.
when it's good, he says it's good. When it's middling, he says it's middling. And, when it's bad, he says it's bad. And he's been criticized because, like in many cities that for a long time haven't had serious restaurants, they're used to their press being cheerleaders and always and only saying good things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you want to be a serious restaurant city, you need serious restaurant critics. And Laban is that. He's very knowledgeable and intelligent guy.
And the word critic, I mean, it means critical. It means I'm going to look at this with a critical eye.
Well, and also, frankly, if you want to sell newspapers, people want to rely on your newspaper. For a long time, the New York Times had precedence here in New York. Now there are many publications in the New York area that people take seriously, but they only take them seriously because they say the good and the bad. And maybe you disagree with that critic once in a while, but when you pick up a newspaper and you're checking out of the supermarket, you open a little book, it's the restaurant guide to wherever, and it's only positive things, you know immediately that it's just the same as advertising.
And what Francis and I aren't saying that every restaurant critic is correct. Okay, restaurant critics make mistakes. I mean, Francis and I recall a recent review where the restaurant critic just simply made some mistakes in their writing, and when they were talking about certain foods, they made mistakes in talking about the history and from where something came and things like that. Restaurant critics are not infallible and shouldn't be expected to be.
Well, here's the news. A restaurant that Laban reviewed that he didn't like is suing him. Chop's restaurant is suing Craig Laban. And what's happened is it's gone. We talked about this. We mentioned this before, and I think it was laughable. Well, it's turned from laughable to despicable. Chop's restaurant, a guy named Plotkin owns it. And let me tell you, the restaurant critic doesn't like your restaurant? Then deal with it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Don't sue them. So he sues them, and he was saying initially that when Laban had criticized the steak he had gotten, the restaurateur was saying he had ordered a steak sandwich without the bread. He didn't order our steak. Well, Laban says, no, I ordered the steak frites.
And here's my receipt to prove it.
And now Laban has turned up the receipt to prove it, plus the other people who were at the table with him testified or showed up to corroborate his story that he ordered the steak frites. So now Plotkin, who owns Chops, has withdrawn that claim from the lawsuit. It seems as though he doesn't have a leg to stand on. It seems as though this lawsuit's going to go away. But hold on a second.
There's a very important part of this.
Here's what he's doing. Plotkin wants to take the deposition from Craig Laban, the restaurant critic.
He's done that. He's taken a deposition from him already.
In video.
And he videotaped it.
Now, normally, the deposition, especially in a case like this, is a stenographer's recording or a voice recording. But he insisted that it be a video deposition. He wants this thing to get, I believe, okay, this is my belief, if this thing gets to court, what he wants to do is he wants to bust Craig Laban's anonymity. Mm-hmm. He wants to, and that's the problem. He's using a court procedure, even though I think this lawsuit is garbage, I think he's going to lose, I think it's cynical, but he's trying to unmask Craig Laban. You know what? Your city needs Craig Laban.
Right.
Your restaurant industry needs a restaurant
here's,
critic.
Who's here's like my that. Point here, and here's what bugs me about this. It's okay to be critical of our critics the way our critics are critical of us.
Yes.
I don't have any problem at all with Plotkin coming out or somebody coming out against Frank Bruni and railing him for saying things that they disagree with. And frankly, I've disagreed with things that critics have said about me. I don't have any problem with that. But this industry, first of all, needs critics. Okay?
And it needs them to be able to speak their mind.
Okay. You are biting off your nose to spite your face. Okay. You need those critics. Those critics are important to our industry because they separate the good restaurants and the great restaurants from the chaff, and we need our critics to be critical in order to do that. They are good for our industry. They're not bad for our industry.
And listen, Craig can't speak about this at all, and, you know, I'm not friends with him. I don't know Craig that well. He's just been on the show a couple times. He's been very nice. But the Philadelphia Inquirer needs to stand behind Craig. They need to not settle on this lawsuit. They need to take it all the way. It's important for us all in the business. It's important for us all as Americans with freedom of speech. If you believe in Craig Laban, drop them a note at the Philadelphia Inquirer or sign onto their website. Let them know that you support Craig Laban in this lawsuit.
It's okay for a restaurant critic to make a mistake. Okay, whether it's true or false, it's okay for him to make a mistake. We can't sue our restaurant critics when they do.
And he didn't even make a mistake. It's okay for a restaurant critic not to like your restaurant. Grow up, deal with it. Central Jersey, 1450, times 1115. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Today we're joined by restaurateur and author Stefan Renaud. His cookbook is Pork and Sons, filled with fantastically vivid pictures of porcine delights. The book was awarded the French Cookbook of the Year in 2006, but the title is misleading. Pork and Sons is not just a cookbook. It's more of a pay-on to pork, including everything from recipes to family history to delicious meat. Pork and Sons is available in English now, and it's a beautiful book.
Stefan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to speak with you.
Now, your book has been translated into several languages, right? We started off in French, and how many languages can we read the book now?
Oh, maybe 7 different languages, in Germany, Dutch, in Switzerland, in U.S., in U.K., so it's a good surprise for me.
You're surprised people are interested in pork? Because I'm not.
But it was like a big gift for me to write this book, and now to speak with you, it's unbelievable.
I tell you, the book is incredible. It's a large, beautiful, hardcover book. We see more and more that people want to know about food, about recipes in the book, but I think that people hunger for food to be contextualized, for food to be put in the context of a story. And you've written a story here. What's the story in the book?
Well, this is my story. You know, I grew up in a little village in France, which name is Saint-Agrève. It's around nothing. There is nothing around Saint-Agrève except pigs. So that's why I wanted to write this book, because my grandpa was a butcher of the village. And I spent a lot of time with him in his butchery. You know, his butchery was my playground during the vacation, during the weekend. So we traveled farm to farm to find the good animal for his butchery. So that's why I wanted to write the story of the family for my children. And so it started like that.
I understand. And, unfortunately, my grandfather was a funeral director.
Yeah.
Why do you think the book has become such a sensation in Europe?
I don't know. You know, maybe because this is a real book with a real story and with a real recipe. It's my heart in the book. You know, all the people you have in the book, I grew up with them. So it was like something very special for me to have them in my book. This is a real book.
A lot of recipe books, they're very focused on what we like to call the middle meats, the primary mm-hmm. cuts, the pork chop, the pork tenderloin, the pork loin. What appeals to me about this book is there's a lot of time spent on the hams and the trotter and
the belly.
How to make pâtés and what you're going to do with the tertiary, we call them, or the second or third cuts of meat that are not the ones that you see front and center at every butcher shop. And that was very appealing to me.
You know, now we say something in France that everything is good in pork.
Mm-hmm.
You can eat pork from the head to the tail. And very important to explain to the people that each part of the pig is very good. You just have to know how to cook such kind of part of pig. I love this animal for that.
And I think if you pick up the book, you will learn to cook more of the parts of the pig and make them appealing. And there are great photos to guide you through as well. Hey, listen, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:24.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're speaking with fellow restaurateur and author Stéphane Reynaud about his book Pork and Sons, which Mark and I have fallen in love with. Am I talking about pork? Yes. Am I talking about the book? Yes. You start your book with the killing of the pig. You write about it in a very special and very respectful way. Why did you choose to start your book with a subject that might put off some readers?
Why? Because, you know, in Saint-Agrève, we have this tradition. Each farm has a pig in the farm because it's very easy to raise a pig. They like everything, so if the farmer produces potatoes or corns, and he can give to the pigs, no problem. is like a, how to tell that, like a piggy bank. When you kill the pig during the winter, you have all the meat for the whole year. You can prepare, you know, the sausages, the prosciutto, the saucisson, the salami, everything for the year. I wanted to start with this tradition because we know the people who raise the animals. So we know what the animal has to eat. How you tell that? It's very important to know where the food is coming from. We can do that in France. You know, the food regulation closed the eye if you eat your own pig. If you want to sell it, no, you can't do that.
Right.
But for your one consumption, yes, it's okay.
When you butcher a pig and you eat the whole animal, you create different seasons by the different products that you take from the pig, don't you?
Yeah, you have to wait 6 months for the salami or for the ham. And that's a good animal. For family.
On this show, we often talk about how we don't like the way that a lot of our animals are killed in factory farms. I do think some of the ways that some of the mainstream food animals are treated is inhumane. Yet we also come under fire from animal rights activists who think that we should never kill animals for food. I think that one of the great things that was very moving about the way that the pork was treated and killed in this book is that it's really a celebration when you kill a pig.
A real celebration because when we kill the animal, he had a good life before. You know, he had a lot of space in the space in Saint-Agrève. It's never easy for me to kill the animal. You know, I don't do that with a big smile. But that's like that. And if you want to have some meat, you have to kill the animal. That's the way. But if you know the life of the animal, it's more easy.
We'll be back right after the news with Stefan Reynaud about his wonderful book, Pork and Sons. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450. WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Café Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Stefan Reynaud. His book is Pork and Sons. You need to pick it up if you have any respect for animals, meat, or us at all. You can find out how to do that at restaurantguysradio.com.
In this book, you spend a little bit of time on a different kind of pork, a pork that I think most Americans are unfamiliar with. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between the conventional pig that...
You know, there is different kind of pig. We have one I like in France, which name is Cunoir du Limousin, a white and black pig. The meat is completely different because there is a very good fat around the meat because it's important, the fat of the pig. If you go in a supermarket, you just buy, you know, some pork fillet without fat, and it's not the real meat of the pig. You have to have fat, and this fat is good for the body.
Well, here in the United States, we breed our pigs in factories, and they're designed to have as little fat as possible. And there was a whole advertising campaign where we referred to pork as the other white meat because people wanted it to taste as much like chicken as they could.
Tragic, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's tragic because, you know, we kill a pig each year in my village, and each year the taste is completely different because it depends what they had to eat. And it was funny because the last pig we killed, it was in a friend who is a goat cheese maker, and he gave a lot of cheese to the pigs, and the meat was more white and was more like a little taste of milk. It was unbelievable, and it's good, you know, to have different tastes. Mm-hmm. To have, I like that. If it's to have always the same taste with, you know, the white meat you can find in the supermarket, for what?
Yeah, exactly.
It's meat. It's better to buy a meat which is more expensive, but have less meat, but have good meat.
Has some character.
Do you know
that in France it's become to change on if you have a good butcher in France, you are a rich man because people now want to know and they want to have good stuff in the plate and That's why they prefer to buy more expensive but to have good quality.
When I traveled throughout Europe, I don't know, in the 80s and the 90s, mm-hmm. I was shocked with how far along America had fallen down the road of eating corporate food. And I think it's going the other way now, happily, in the United States, at least a certain segment of the population, mostly our listeners, who are looking for seasonal, quality, good food. I was listening to a radio program from the 30s, and they talked about, it was Campbell's Soup, which was then just trying to convince you to have a canned soup. And they said in that advertisement, you know, this year was a particularly good crop of tomatoes, so Campbell's tomato soup tastes even better than usual. And today, in corporations, they would never admit
that. Would be a nightmare for Campbell's if their soup tasted better one year than the other.
Right, they would never admit for any seasonal difference. And here you are talking about, well, this pig ate differently than that pig, so that the pork tastes different. I think that's great.
Yes, that's great. You know, my grandpa told me something very important. To find a good animal, you have to find the good people to raise the animal. That's the best thing. You know, we were afraid about all the disease we had, like the matco, like the chicken disease. So now people take care about what they have in the plate and take care what they buy in a food store. So that's why there is more and more like organic food and such kind of thing.
In your book, you sort of mix stuff up a little bit. You match Spanish chorizo with mozzarella and basil. You mix things up. How did you select the recipes that went into your book, and is there a guiding principle behind them?
I really don't know. It was only in my mind, in my imagination. You know, I like traditional recipe like the pot-au-feu and such kind of recipe, but I like to put some new things like fried ginger and the pot-au-feu, little things.
Well, how has the book been received back by your family and your village and the people who, you know, have had the story of their lives and their pork spread in seven languages now?
The bookseller was very happy in my village because, you know, in Christmas 2006, I think it was amazing in Santa Grace. Each family buy the book. So it was great.
Well,
it was very funny because, you know, it's a small village. There is only 2,000 people there, and everybody knows everybody. And so everybody knows someone in the book and wanted to have the book. And it was a very good story for everybody.
Well, when we come back in just a moment, we're going to be talking more with Stefan Renaud about his book, Pork and Sons, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:44.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps, to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're talking about the book Pork and Sons with its author, restaurateur Stefan Renaud.
Stefan, you said earlier in the show, somebody who has a great butcher is very rich. Mm-hmm. Finding these tertiary cuts of pork that I was talking about before can be very, very difficult, especially here in the United States, where the center of the animal is what we focus on. In the back of your book, you've included this great source of places to buy some of these things, both online, in Europe, and in the United States.
You know, it was very important for me to write such kind of address in France. And when the American publisher told me to, I've told him, yeah, it's very important that if people want to buy very special things, they have to know where to buy these different things.
You know, it's funny. Look, I'm looking at the index now, and I see some like Ottomanelli and Sons in New York City. Whoever came up with these butcher sources in the United States did a great job. These are some of the best butchers in America. I think the book is worth it for the resource alone of being able to find the butchers. Now, in addition to being an author, you have a restaurant.
My restaurant is close to Paris, so it's 600 kilometers from my village. But my family live in the village. My house is in Saint-Agrève, so I'm working like 3 weeks in my restaurant, and I live for 1 week or 10 days in Saint-Agrève. And then I have some people in Saint-Agrève who take care about some animals, mm-hmm. keep the animals close to Saint-Agrève, and bring me the animals to Paris. Only products of the season,
mm-hmm.
because it's completely stupid, you know, to have like a tomato in the winter for what? I don't know. People have to eat some products of the season.
If people stop and think about their food and taste it and taste a really great tomato in season, they'll demand it again and again.
They'll never accept that supermarket tomato in the middle of March.
But the marketing is out there to try and convince people that mediocre tomatoes all year round, that there's no difference in them. And I think that's a lot of what we do in our restaurants and what we do in our show, and it seems what you do in your book and what you do in your restaurants.
Yes, we try to do that because it's a good way for everything, for the taste, for the ecology.
So have you found that in your restaurant people have read the book and they're coming in just because they've read the book and they're...
That's true, yes. A lot of people. It's funny because I've met some people. I know Saint-Agrève, I went there, you know, so it's nice to speak with such kind of people.
I have to say I'm going to make a journey to your restaurant. And now I have to make a journey to the restaurant now that I've read the book that
and
I love it.
The restaurant's name is Villeneuve Trois.
Well, now let's go back to the book for a second. Talk to us about lard and its uses in cuisine.
I think it's the most important thing in the pig. This is the lard, you know. When you buy a prosciutto in Spain, the best thing is the lard.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have such kind of lard, you can't have a prosciutto like that.
I want to thank you for coming on the show. I want to thank you for writing this book. We're going to come visit you in France, I promise you.
With great pleasure.
Stefan.
More than 7 days a week. You can come whenever you want.
Great.
And the book is Pork and Sons. Its author is Stefan Renaud, who's joined us from his home in Paris. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guy, Mark in France.
You know, we were just talking with Stefan Renaud, and one of the things Stefan talked about were the differences from day to day with the food that he eats. And it's based on what the animals are eating and based on the season and based on the sunshine and based on the quality of food they eat and the time they spend doing one thing or another.
And Pop-Tarts don't do that.
By serving a lot of these natural products and by serving a lot of these things they're not exactly alike every single time. Every once in a while, and this happened to me just recently in the restaurant, we had some wild boar that was tough. It was tougher than it should have been. And the grain of it was a little funky, and it wasn't quite right, and we needed to replace it for a customer. When you serve real food, real things happen to it. And I'd rather serve you something excellent 99% of the time than something mediocre or below mediocre 100% of the time. I'd rather have that little nuance, that little chance that something can go wrong. And that's the truth. That's what can happen when you make real products. Mm-hmm. Something can go wrong. And occasionally you'll get a tough piece of wild boar or a tough pork chop or something that isn't 100% the way it should
be. Well, and the thing about a great restaurant is you need to be there to correct that when that happens. You know, when that comes out or when you're butchering it or when you see it, or God forbid, when it gets to a customer, that you're there to make it right.
But occasionally when you serve real products, those kinds of things are going to happen, and you're going to bring home some wild boar, and it's going to be a little tougher than you wanted it to be.
All this talk of pork, I need to go have lunch. Hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. It's 12 noon.